Technique. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right. What is the most you'd be willing to give Alex Bregman right now that he just might accept? I think my number is not one that he would accept. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I tweeted this earlier, and we'll get to some of the options here. My answer was $60 million, 4 years, club option on year four. Now, I don't think that he would accept, I know that he wouldn't accept this, but if he keeps this current form going into the offseason, like maybe it's not the highest AAV that he would get, but I think it's the most guaranteed money he would get.
It is. I was thinking about this from the standpoint of I was almost going to go with just a flat 1 year deal because I think that's what we're going to get to. I think if he continues anywhere close to this kind of lack of production, that he's going to look for a 1 year deal to try and do this all again and figure stuff out in the offseason. But I would go 2 and 36.
2 and 36, so $18 million per.
18 per for 2 years.
Right now, this second.
Right
like
now,
you're doing
this
right now.
Right now, this second, because I believe that. There's the belief that he will figure something out. I think that because of the way he gained the weight early in the season, you're not just going to lose 23 pounds just like that or change anything that drastically. But I believe that he will then he might just relax a little bit to try and go back to his old swing a little bit more. That way you salvage this year. And then going forward, I think you go back to the old Alex Bregman a little bit. But that's as far as I'm willing to go.
Okay. Since Bregman's not really handling, and this might not be the reason why, but Bregman's not handling so far the contract year very well.
Nope.
Now, he's a notorious slow starter, but he has never been this bad in his notoriously slow starts. This is on epic proportions when it comes to Alex Bregman. So, like, you throw him a little bit of money, he takes away less than you would, like, expect him to take. But you give him a little bit of confidence and you take away the pressure of, oh my goodness, yeah. I'm losing millions upon millions of dollars.
That 2 year deal allows him a year to relax, kind of get it back to where it was, or at least better than respectability, because he said himself, you know, he wants to be an above average player, however he labeled it when he said that he's not going to.
Right.
With the bad words. But then words. He gets himself settled into the fact that once he finds it, you're going to be in another situation where you got to play for it. But maybe he's better prepared.
He was doing some naughty things with words. What are you, where are you at on this, Brian? The most you would give him that he just, like, I don't think Boris is taking either one of our contracts, but okay, well, then that's our impasse because I'm not giving you more than
I'll
that.
I'll say that. The other thing I will say with all of this is Scott Boris will not have Alex Bregman as a client at the end of the year.
Mm, whoa, why?
Or right shortly after the end
like
of the
year. Like kind of what Montgomery did?
Kind of like what Montgomery did, but also kind of like after he figures out in this offseason that the combo platter. I think Scott Boris is not Alex Bregman's. If he signs, the next deal Alex Bregman signs will also be a deal that he gets rid of Scott Boris.
These are the hot takes that get me to the front of my seat and my elbows on the table. I like that take. That would be very interesting.
Scott Boris' days of being a power agent, I think, are behind him.
Ooh, even hotter. Now,
certainly was a bad offseason for him.
What hurts about Bregman, though, is that Bregman's kind of doing it to himself. Like, Bregman's numbers are kind of like, why would Bregman not get 30 but get 18? Is it Boris, or is it because Alex Bregman's been awful this year?
But if you look at Boris' track record, too, all the way back to Keuchel, he has a whole lot of promises and then doesn't deliver. To where I think that the luster's wearing off on Scott Boris is my agent.
I think that's case by case because he's had some huge, huge contracts. Who's Otani's agent?
It doesn't matter.
Scott Boris.
I mean, because some of those guys that he's still getting massive contracts are going to write their own contract,
right.
Essentially.
True. No, but I mean, Boris has obviously had some huge wins.
No, he has, but I mean, I can't think of, and maybe I'm just not remembering one, but I can't think of the last guy where we said, damn, Boris really got him more than we were expecting.
Like
a lot of these guys that we're talking about.
Well, he's a Cole guy, right? Yeah, he's got Cole. He's got Scherzer. Scherzer got 43. He's got Harper. He's got Correa. He's got Corey Seager.
Okay, Correa.
Anthony Rendon.
Correa's a good one. But a lot of those names you mentioned, like Cole and Scherzer, I think they wrote their own contract. I don't think that is.
Anthony Rendon?
Harper did.
Rendon was coming off
Rendon's
some really
coming
good seasons,
World
though.
Okay. He's got Soto. Like, Soto's another
Soto
one that's going to
write
his own contract.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he's got some big name clients. There's no doubt about that. I think what Boris has screwed up is that he has not really adjusted to what the free agent market is. Like, he's still living in the past, like 5 to 7 years ago, where like, oh, all these guys are going to get this.
And Major League Baseball general managers
have wisened up on not giving that many years and that big a contract because they've realized that it's not good business, that you're using a lot of money and they're not going to pay off that ROI. And general managers across baseball have wisened up, and Boris hasn't made that adjustment yet. So it will be interesting to see if he eventually does make that adjustment. Anyways, Brian, what number for you?
Blakers, you gave him an $18 million AAV, right? Is that right?
That's
but
right.
For two years. I think I would go the same AAV, but for a third year, and that would equal exactly Matt Chapman's contract. 3 years, $54 million. I would offer that to Bregman. Same contract as Matt Chapman, who also has Scott Boris. If he takes that, I'd be fine with it, and you give him some time to figure things out, not feel the pressure of needing that next contract right away. But then he's at, you know, he's at age 30. He's out of it before age 35, before you really start to feel the drop-off of his physical peak.
Yeah, that's I think they would be insulted by that, but I think it's fair. Like, whenever we were looking at the offseason, we're like, let's look at Chapman and then maybe add $5 million per year. Like, I think that, you know, over the course of their career, Bregman's been a better hitter than Chapman.
I think that's where we got to that point, right? Because Chapman's got more pop. He may be a better – I think he's a slightly better defender.
I don't know if he's got more pop.
I think so. I mean, well, it's hard to argue with it this year.
This year, he's probably Chapman's been pretty bad this year. I looked up his numbers earlier, but Bregman's
been bad. Got one season over 30 home runs.
Yeah,
Bregman only has two, so it's not a major difference.
But like, Chapman hit 17 last year. What'd Bregman have, 20 something?
I think Bregman was over 20.
Yeah, I think Bregman's got a little bit more pop. Bregman's career, and I'm talking about after 18 and 19, because that's a totally different player. Bregman in his career is substantially a better hitter than Chapman. Now, I would argue that Chapman's a substantially better defender, but they're going to pay offense more than defense.
Right. So that's why that's how we got to the fact there was a slightly bit more money for Bregman than for Chapman. But now, based on the fact that Chapman's got four bombs already, and he's not hitting any better. He's hitting .221.
Yeah.
But and his OPS is .656. But at least
been better than Bregman.
I was going to say, and both those numbers are better than Bregman. So Bregman should be lucky if he gets a deal, especially if it's three. I don't know that he's going to want to go three. I think in his head, he believes he's going to turn it around at some point and then figure it out.
Well, I mean, I think that Bregman's going to be better than this. I think he's going to be better than how he's performed in his first 100 at-bats.
What does his return to the mean look like?
Because
I think we all agree he's going to return to some sort of mean at some point, but what does that look like? Is it a lower mean?
Like, are we talking about for the rest of the year,
or
are we talking about what does the average look at the end of the year? Because I think that for the
rest of the year,
he hit .262 last year. He's at .216 now. I think it's realistic for him to hit .250 the rest of the year.
.250 is what I had in mind.
He had a .363 on base last year, .287 this year. I think it's realistic for him to have a .340, .345 on base. Now, in terms of the power, like, he hit .25 last year. I think Bregman's going to struggle to get
15.
Yeah, I think he'll get to 15. Like, 15 is where I would set the number.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly where I put
So that's better, obviously, than what he's doing right now. But it's still not a very good offensive player. And he's on the wrong side of 30.
And that's not worth that's not even worth 15 a year right now.
I mean, it was crazy to me when everybody in the offseason was like, oh, Bregman's a $30 million a year player. In what world is Alex Bregman a third? Like, last year he was good. Well, he was a good player. He wasn't great. He was good. Last year, .804 OPS. The year before that, .820. That's not a $30 million a year player.
No. Like, but you listen to Rosenthal and these national guys, too, who don't watch him enough, but just remember the back of the baseball card.
They remember 2019.
They do.
Yeah. They're going to say, oh, there's another team that's going to pay him because of the intangibles, the leadership. He's got this. He's got that. And guess what? None of it's showing this year.
And they're probably carrying water for Boris. They're probably carrying a little bit of water for Boris because they get him information, too. This texture says right now maybe a five-year $250 for Bregman. That's $50 million a year. Delete your account.
Get out of here.
That's ridiculous. That's a troll. 85 for three. That was similar to what Brian offered, right? He said, because that's, no, that's way
54.
More.
No, Brian, I said three 54. For 54.
85 in three is $28
million. There's no way.
Alex Bregman is not a $28 million.
I think Bregman would take it.
I think he would snatch that up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He would snatch that up. I wouldn't offer it.
This may be a dumb question, but do they do incentive-based contracts in baseball? Somewhat. Now, I mean, the MLB Players Association is the strongest players union in all of sports, so those contracts are usually like super baseline, like super, like you're going to get $28 million a year. They might throw in $1 million bonus if you win a silver MVP slugger, if you win a, like, ball, you, yeah, you hit certain RBI totals, home run totals, but 98% of it is guaranteed money without incentives. But yes, they do have some incentives and contracts, but it's usually MVP, Cy Young's, award winning type of stuff. And again, he's probably not looking to do that. 4963. Yeah, I'm sure Scott Boras is looking for somewhere in the range at 25 to 30 a year. I don't see Alex Bregman getting 25 to 30. Let's fast forward and let's assume for a second that Alex Bregman like puts up the numbers the rest of the way that we threw out there is like, you know,
so 250,
trying to
15.
Get back to the norm. Yeah. 250. Let's say he hits 15 home runs. Alex Bregman, free agent at the end of the year. What is the most money he's making in an AAV? Not total dollars, but the most
some other
AAV
team?
Free agent. Okay. Anybody can sign him. And we're assuming that he improves back to the mean a bit.
I think to Brian's point, then it's the Chapman contract.
I think he gets a little
18 per year. I think he can get up to 20.
I think it's 3
if there's a bidding war.
If there's a bidding war, it ends up being 3 and 60.
Yeah, I think the max is 20 a year.
Yeah.
On a short like 3 to 4 year deal.
So 20 million?
Yeah.
Assuming
he gets back to the mean, right. Yes.
20 is about where I had him too. I was arguing with people on Twitter today that he's going to be closer to 15 than 30.
I totally agree with that.
Right?
No doubt. He's got a lot of ground to make up, and because he's between swings, trying to figure it all out and which one's better for him, I think there's a lot going on in that man's melon, and I don't think he gets close to 30 this year.
To simplify it, the number would be $22.5 million. Over, under $22.5 million AAV.
Under.
I think it's under.
Yeah, under.
I think it's under. And if he doesn't have some regression, or not regression, I guess progression, to the mean.
Then it's under 15.
It's like 12.
It's exactly right.
It's like Kevin Kiermaier money.
That's where I end up getting to the point where I said he's going to be on a one-year deal next year with somebody so that he can try and do this all again in another year.
Yeah, that's not really – I agree with you, like not arguing, but that's not really beneficial to the player either because he's on the wrong side of 30.
Right.
And it's like, Like I think there's a better chance that he would accept – like would you rather if you're Bregman – because I threw out the $60 million for 4 years with the fourth-year team option. Would you rather take that deal or would you rather take a $20 million one-year deal?
If you're Bregman?
Yeah.
I'd take the 1 year for 20 because Bregman's ego is such that he does not believe he's anywhere close to being
done. Yeah,
but
you're kind of putting yourself – I mean, I guess you are putting yourself in the player's shoes, but you would have the comfortability, I don't know how to say that word, of staying in Houston and being the organization that you know.
Well,
I think I would take the guarantee. I would take the $60 million, 4 years, fourth-year player or team option.
You think the Astros would give him that deal?
I think so.
I do, too.
I think that they would, especially if they had the team option on the fourth year. Because there's not really anybody knocking on the door ready to take the third base.
No, Wags' kid is not there yet.
He's not even playing third base.
Oh, he's played first.
He's played one game at third base. He's played most of his games at first,
yeah.
A couple of games at second. The other guy that they like is Zach DiZinzo, I think is how you pronounce it. He hasn't played all year because he's got a messed-up wrist. Like, I think they would give that money to Bregman.
I think they would, too.
It'd be less than Abreu, too.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it'd be a little bit more. 60 for three is a little bit more.
I totally think that he wants to stay here so that he has being as comfortable as he can figuring it all out. But I believe his ego is going to tell him that he is going to earn it back because he is that good.
I hope that he actually does become that good. I would love for him to heat up, finish the season strong, lead the Astros to a World Series, and then I'll shake his hand on his way out the door. Eric the Driver, Bregman this moment is 15 to 20 million a year player, and I'd lock him up for 3-5 years at most. In what world is a guy that is hitting .216 with a .287 on base and a .555 OPS, since when is that guy a 15 to 20 million dollar player? He's got a negative war. You're going to play a negative war guy at this moment?
15 and that's factoring to 20 million? In, I would assume, a positive defensive war?
Yeah, I mean, it's cumulative.
Yeah.
It's everything.
I would assume that. So that being negative, his war, overall war being negative is even a bigger indictment on his offense because his defense is generally a positive.
4071, 60 for 4, easy over 1 for 20. That's right. I had $15 million a year. Brandon T, 2 years, 34, 35 million, take it or leave it. That's 17 a year. I kind of like that one from an Astros perspective a little bit more than mine.
How many years?
Two. So it's $17 million per for 2 years.
Yeah, I mean,
that's about what Joel had.
That's basically what I said, yeah.
I like that one better than mine. Like, you're paying him a little bit more AAV, but you're not tied into that third year if a KC goes completely off the rails, kind of like Jose.
And that kind of lines up with some of your other expiring contracts, too.
Yeah.
Where if you have to hit the reset button in a couple of years, you're not set with Alex Bregman's contract.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, right now, if he were to enter free agency right now with his numbers that he has, I don't think he's getting. I don't think he's getting more than $10 million a year.
I think it's between 10 and 12.
I think he might even have trouble getting double digits.
I think there's going to be someone that believes he'll find it.
You're probably right. Some desperate team that needs a third baseman would say, "Hey, here's $10 to $12 million, 1 year deal. You can have 500 at bats." Yeah, you're
or if you're a team like the Mets that maybe has overspent on a lot of players and things like that, that feel like, hey, if we had this kind of guy with the other guys that we have, maybe we catch a deal.
Yeah. Battery Check says some team will give him 6 years, $200 million like Correa did. Problem is Correa was younger, and Correa was coming off his best offensive season, arguably, and Correa's defense was elite at shortstop, a higher premium defensive position. He also says that Bregman starts every season with poor numbers and then gets better later on.
Everybody says he's a slow starter, but guess what? This is we're a little bit deeper than a slow start.
Somebody sent me his starts last year in the first month, and they're all slow, but this year is worse than all of the previous years.
Not surprising.
Yeah, but, I mean, again, Correa's a bad comp there because Correa was younger. Correa had a good offensive season in his final year, and Correa's defense the final year that he was in Houston was the best defense in all of baseball at shortstop, a premium defensive position. All right, the Deshaun Watson trade. It's almost all in the books. Who got the better end of it? We don't need to know the answer there. We know the answer there. But how bad really is it? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Gin O' Ben is the best. There, I said it. The vodka, best in the state. The gin, best in the market. Or the bourbon, the double platinum winner at the prestigious Ascot Awards. Gin O' Ben uses their innovative, revolutionary technology that eliminates impurity for the cleanest, smoothest spirits you will ever taste. One of the impurities it eliminates are the heavy alcohols, kind of like the stuff you use to clean up a cut. That stuff's not in Gin O' Ben. It's smooth. It's clean. Eliminates the burn. Don't labor it through your drink. Enjoy it. Savor it. You can do that with Gin O' Ben. We had a caller last Friday. They said, "Brandon, you need to sell Gin O' Ben better because it's better than how you're selling it." I thought I've been selling it good all along, but apparently it's better than how I've been selling it. So get some Gin O' Ben like the listener on Friday, and you will love it. Head to the Gin O' Ben tasting room. Stop at the liquor store. Pick up a bottle today. Ask for it when you're at the bar or the restaurant you're going to tonight. Also, just head to GentleBen.com. Learn the incredible story, and you can order Gentle Ben straight from the website. Yes, GentleBen.com. You can order Gentle Ben straight from the website. Makes it very easy and simple to do. They also have Gentle Ben at the Astros game. Just to the left of the Crawford boxes, stop by Gentle Ben. Pick up some bourbon. Pick up some of the vodka on the way to your seats when you're watching the Astros play at Minute Maid Park. Gentle Ben, you'll love what's not in it.
ESPN 97.5. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
713-780-ESPN. JD, forget any deal. Cut Bregman after the season. Cut Abreu and Singleton now. You're not cutting Bregman. Well, you said after the season. That's fine. I have no problem letting Bregman walk. Cut Abreu now. They kind of did. They cut him from the 26-man roster starting tomorrow. Singleton's interesting. I mean, Lopefito's up now. I guess you're going to give Singleton a chance. You're going to give him a chance to stay on this team for about a week, I think.
Isn't he out of chances? I mean, haven't we seen enough?
Eh.
I don't know that he's done. Where's his home run power?
He hadn't hit one yet.
Right.
So he's only had 42 at-bats this year.
But if he was supposed to be a boom or bust guy, too, and there's no boom, and it's been a bust, and he gets a couple of hits there, here and there. But overall, I've seen enough. I've already seen – I saw enough going into the season.
So if you're cutting him, what's the move?
Cabbage.
So you're bringing up Cabbage instead of Singleton?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't hate that. Yeah, I don't mind that. That's fine. 4072, it's not my money. I'd give him Shohei Ohtani money. Bad word it.
Yeah.
See, the problem with this, like Josh Innes, like, he tweeted at me today and goes, "It's not my money. I don't care." Okay. Let's think about this. Let's talk this through, though. But isn't there a such thing as payroll distribution? Like, you might not care if they spend a bunch of money, but if you know that Jim Crane's going to spend $225 million, don't you care where the money's going?
You have to care because as a fan, you don't want your team to suck. So you don't want a Johnny Buss playing with dad's money with the Lakers move and just saying, I like guys that I like, and I'm going to load up and give them way too much and way more than they deserve. And then I'm not going to care because I like those guys. But as a fan base, you care because your team – sucks because of the mismanagement of funds and distribution of it by the guy in charge.
Yeah, would you rather spend $20 million on Jose Abreu, or would you rather spend $20 million on somebody who is really helping you? You care about the money. You might not care about how much Crane's spending, but if you know that Crane's going to spend X amount, you absolutely care about how it's divided up and the players that they're bringing in with that money. So you always care. I hate that you know, that take. Well, I don't care. It's not my money. You do care because you care about the players that are on this roster that are helping you. Do you care that Jose Abreu's costing you $19.5 million and he's the reason you don't have somebody better? If the answer to that is yes, and of course it's yes, then you absolutely care. From one deal to another, Adam Schefter tweeted out the final, I guess, Texans-Browns Deshaun Watson trade. I know that there's some, like, the smartest guys in the rooms. They're like, well, there's still a six-round pick here. Well, everybody knows that. It's like you still have those type of people. Yeah. But the trade is pretty much done between these two teams. The Browns received Deshaun Watson and a six-round pick this year that they included in the Jerry Jeudy trade. So it was part of Jerry Jeudy. It wasn't the main thing to get Jerry Jeudy. So they got Watson and part of the piece, the small part of the piece that got them Jerry Jeudy. The Texans received in this trade a first-round pick that became Kenyon Green, so not a great start. A fourth-round pick that became Damian Pierce, which was a great start, then got worse. A first-round pick in 23, which was Will Anderson Jr. That's fantastic. 2023 third, which became Tank Dell. That's fantastic. 2024 first-round pick, which they traded back with Minnesota, became Kamari Lassiter and really Stephon Diggs. And then they drafted Jamal Hill in the sixth round with this, and then Caden Bullock they got for Deshaun Watson. So who won this trade between the Browns and the Houston Texans?
You also don't have to pay and overpay an underperforming Deshaun Watson. It's a no-brainer for me that the Texans won the trade. And, yeah, it might be different if Deshaun Watson played like and better than Deshaun Watson as a Texan. Deshaun Watson has been a joke. I mean, he's been hurt. He hasn't shown that he can get back to his pre-massage kick himself on the field and play good football again. So that makes it a hell of a lot easier. But even still, I think that what the Texans came away with and the fact that in the process they found their franchise quarterback as well, it's a no-brainer.
See, that's where I'm at on this. Like, all the pieces you got back are good. Like, Will Anderson, awesome. Tank Dell, you know, I love him. I'm excited about Bullock. I'm bullish on Bullock because I think he actually complements Jalen Petrie well because he's like a center field type safety. Petrie, I think, is better suited for the box. Kenyon Green, hopefully, he's a starting left guard for this team going forward. The best part of this trade is what you mentioned, the opportunity cost of not having to miss out on C.J. Stroud. The fact that you didn't have a quarterback and you had to go seek a quarterback, the Texans won there alone. All the other players are fantastic. Anderson, Tank, Kenyon Green, Caden Bullock, all of that. But the fact that they were able to acquire and draft C.J. Stroud because they no longer had Deshaun Watson is a win in of itself.
It could win the trade completely, but at the same time, getting quality players that are going to fill roles for you on your football team as well, and realizing that while you're still doing those things, you're able to bring in higher priced guys because you're not paying a Deshaun Watson type contract, which was coming down the pike as well too, set yourself up for a whole lot of possibilities for success for the near future for this franchise that you wouldn't have had you decided Deshaun was your guy that couldn't get away.
Do you know where Deshaun Watson's going? Not that fantasy football, you know, drafts are really that important, but it does, you know, fantasy football does have a representation of statistics, mm-hmm. and statistics are, you know, important to quarterbacks. I don't think quarterback fantasy football rankings necessarily correlates with, like, real quarterback rankings, but I do think that it's somewhat close. Deshaun Watson, right now, because I did my first...
Are you already doing
already?
My first underdog?
What do you mean already? I was doing them before the draft.
Oh, my God.
Today I did my first post-NFL draft.
On underdog,
guys? I'm not going to say where.
Okay.
Deshaun Watson right now is quarterback number 22 in the NFL. And again, fantasy football, not, you know, real life, but I do think that it's similar. I think it's like +3, +5.
Like,
what would you say?
High.
What would you say, like, fantasy quarterback rankings to real life QB rankings? What is the delta there? Is it, you know, even? Is it -3, +3, one way or the other?
It depends on if they're a running quarterback or not. Like,
if they're
a running quarterback, then their fantasy finish is going to be way higher than their real life rank. But if they're a pocket quarterback, I think it's fairly accurate.
You think 22 is high?
I think it might be.
The 22nd quarterback in the NFL.
I think he might be washed.
Who would you have in front of him that's like, guys, here are guys behind Deshaun Watson.
Okay.
Drake May's QB 23.
Nope.
Number 24 is Will Levis. 25 is Geno Smith. 26th is Justin Fields. 27th is J.J. McCarthy. 28th is Derek Carr. 29th is Bryce Young. 30th is Daniel Jones. Like, who are you putting ahead of Deshaun?
Well, I think the two that are possibility are Geno Smith and
Geno Smith and ahead of Deshaun.
Bryce Young. Geno was terrible last year.
Bryce Young ahead of Deshaun?
Yeah, because I don't believe it's ugly for Deshaun. I just don't believe in Deshaun. Oof. I don't believe he's going to find his football life again. I mean, he's been away from the game.
The numbers are brutal.
Yeah. Well, it's one thing to say once you take that much time off, getting back your body into it and everything into it and being able to take the grind and get the timing down and do all those things. Then on top of that, when you put the injuries and the fact that he missed another significant portion of last season, I just don't know that he ever gets it back.
That's low, though. 22?
Like, yeah, 22 might be a little bit – I might have misjudged that a bit.
I think it's fair. I think it's, like, perfect, actually.
I would have guessed – like
who's 21?
See, I wouldn't have anybody behind him ahead of him, so I think 22 is fine. 21's Baker.
I mean, Baker was better last year.
Baker was better last year for sure, but I think that for next season, maybe he is – on par with, and I think it's a stretch. I think it's a stretch for him to have a Baker Mayfield season.
Baker's 21. Rodgers is 20. I would not have him ahead of Rodgers. 19 is Stafford. No. 18 is Cousins. 17 is Jaden Daniels. 16, Lawrence. 15, Justin Herbert. 14, Goff. 13, Tua. 12, Purdy. 11 is Caleb Williams. And 10th is
Jordan Love. That's the difference in the fantasy ranking, because Jaden Daniels is going to run.
He's going to get
rushing yards. That's going to boost his fantasy value.
Would you rather have, would you rather have Jaden Daniels or Deshaun Watson?
Jaden Daniels.
In real life, would you rather have Jaden Daniels or Deshaun Watson? This year alone.
Deshaun Watson.
Like Cleveland, they probably want to be a Super Bowl contender, right?
I was going to say the team around him matters for his stats too, because Deshaun's got a whole lot of options that are going to get him yards just because he gets the ball to the right people.
If you were a playoff team slash hopeful Super Bowl contender, would you rather have rookie Jaden Daniels or this year Deshaun Watson?
This year Deshaun Watson.
Same. Okay.
So maybe Deshaun's 20-ish. 2021-ish.
Yeah, I would take the rookies out of the equation and say, yeah, if he's 20 is fair.
That's a fall from grace. Because, I mean, he was top 7 before you traded him to Cleveland.
We were talking top 10.
I had him in my top 10 before he got traded.
I did not. You did.
But he was like 11, 12. You, for me, he was like 8, 9, 10, somewhere in that area. Yeah.
I mean, he's played 12 games as a Brown. 12. That's it. I mean,
he got hurt. What is wrong with Michael Wilbon's eye? Deshaun Watson got hurt. Joe Flacco played, and Joe Flacco was an upgrade.
Yep.
Like, imagine being a downgrade to Joe Flacco in 2023.
And so much so that I firmly believe, and stood on this one even when we talked on it, they could not bring Joe Flacco back because of what it might do to Deshaun Watson and because of that very factor, and fans are going to start clamoring for Joe to be the quarterback again.
That's not
ideal.
He's been awful. I mean, his career as a Cleveland Brown, he's played 12 games. He's got a 14-9 interception ratio, and he's averaging only 181 yards per game.
That's
horrible.
4-0-7-1. Houston won this like Dallas won Herschel Walker. Those dividends are coming. Is that text line working, or did I get blocked? No, your texts just suck. I don't even know that they do.
I love that.
I was just here for the joke. I'm not even sure that your jokes, I haven't really kept up. But the best part of the trade is they got C.J. Stroud. That's the best part of the trade.
It'd be a win just for that.
Yeah.
No question.
An opportunity
cost. Forget everything else.
All right. 713-780-ESPN. What are you cashing? What are you trashing? 713-780-377. I have a doozy for you guys today. A doozy. One of my wildest, most outrageous ideas I've ever had. What are you cashing? What are you trashing? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Prepare for overreaction on my mark.
It's that time of the week where overreactions are welcome.
They say Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all time, but he never fought Cassius Clay. What was he afraid of? Boom! Hot take!
It's Cash 'em.
That is so good, but that's exactly right.
Or Trash 'em.
This is your hot take.
Seems like an overreaction.
With a Killer Bees.
Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion.
All right, what are you guys cashing or trashing today? 713-780-ESPN. We've already built up a queue here. 713-780-3776. What are you cashing or trashing, Lakers?
Scott Boras won't be Alex Bregman's agent by... the Astros are going to be in first place by June 19th.
You're moving the goalpost. What was the one you said the other day? By May 1st?
June 1st.
I don't think so. I think it was May 1st.
Was it?
I think. We're going to have to check the tapes.
I don't think this is as far back as June.
I'm not moving the goalposts. I'm adjusting based on the current situation.
Adjusting, moving, what's the difference? What's the difference between adjusting and moving the
goalposts? I was confident the first week and a half, 2 weeks
of the season. Moving the goalposts on the definition of moving the goalposts.
Yeah, he is. I'm not moving the goalposts.
Hey, at least I'm still kicking field goals.
I'm not marking off the 10 yards. I'm just adjusting the 10 yards. you said what date?
June 19th.
Nah, it's too quick. It's 6.5 games.
Yeah, but it's 6.5. It's not that big. That's why I think that there's a chance.
Yeah, I'm going to trash this. 6.5 too soon. They do play the Mariners
this weekend.
They play the Mariners this weekend, but I think they might play them 6 times before the date that you said. So there's opportunities if you go like 5-1, then all of a sudden you've erased 4 of the 6.5 games that are needed. Let me look when they play the Mariners.
And I don't believe Texas is going to...
Yeah, they play at Seattle 4-game set May 27th through May 30th.
That's their World Series.
Make it a we're going to have a reputation, dog.
Yep. I believe that there's a good chance.
All right, I'm going to trash this. I think it's too soon. I think catching 6.5 is more of a like 3-month endeavor. I think the Astros still have to get some guys healthy. They still need to figure out their offense a little bit. Like, is J-Lo going to be good? I'm sorry that I called him that.
Don't, my bad.
It just rolled out of the tongue. I didn't mean to. I'm sorry.
I'd rather you go back to Lopo. I'd rather go back to Lopo.
I didn't mean to. Can we call him Fido or Fido?
I got to start thinking about that more.
Who is Fido?
It's a dog. It's a dog name.
There's like a movie, right?
Probably.
Fido? There's a reason that I know this name.
Fido's just an old-school dog name.
Yeah, it's just an old-school dog name.
It's not like in a movie?
I don't think so. I mean, there's probably been a dog named Fido in a movie, but I don't think it's a famous character.
Jolo's too much like J-Lo.
At least it's not J-Lo.
J-Lo and Jolo is like adjusting and moving. No, I'm going to trash this, though. I think that the Astros will win the division. I just don't think it's going to be that quick when they're in first place.
Yeah, I'm going to trash this as well. I do think they catch and pass and get move into first place, but I think the timeline, I'm going to adjust the timeline a little bit.
I just believe in them more than you two.
Apparently so.
Wrong more often, because your first one was May 1st.
I think this is more like an all-star break sort of thing, like maybe second week of July, because I think I do agree that in the heart of the idea that they're going to start playing better baseball. I just don't think it's going to be at a win clip good enough to catch them by June 1st.
I just expect them to be down by double digits in the division. So,
are you with their play so far?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I'm with you on that. All right. Buckle your seatbelts. This might be the greatest or worst. It's going to be either one. It's either going to be the greatest or the worst cash them or trash them ever.
I'm intrigued.
Baseball should have a throw a towel onto the field rule. Like in boxing, you throw the towel into the ring. It fights over. Your guy loses. Instead of seeing mop-up pitchers like Brandon Belak try to finish off a 10-0 deficit, you can just throw in the towel. Save pitching. No one's going to stick around and watch that. You're down 12-1 in the eighth inning. You don't want to use any more of your pitching. We're all trying to shorten games. Throw in the towel rule. Joe Espada has the white towel in hand. You give up a grand slam in the top of the seventh inning to go down 16-1. I don't want to use any more of my relievers because I want to save them for the coming games because I'm not going to come back from 16-1. You throw the towel onto the field. You quit. Game is over. Other team wins. We'll see you tomorrow.
But there's a threshold where you can use position players, right?
I think it's 10 runs.
Is it 10?
Like in the eighth and ninth?
Something like
that. They put rules on it. There used to not be a rule.
Right. But then stats were getting padded and all these other things that people were complaining about.
White towel rule in baseball.
I'm just going to trash it because because Major League Baseball is going to say that people paid good money for their seats. And if they want to see a full game, then they deserve to see a full game. And that... We're not going to allow that to happen because they're all about the...
Sounds like you're taking Major League Baseball stance. What would your stance be, though?
Plus, fans are leaving when it's 12-1.
My stance is I'm changing the channel if I'm watching on TV.
It sounds like you
so
have
I'm
your own.
So I'm already done, and I've done that earlier than that.
It sounds like you have your own throw-in-the-towel idea.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. It sounds like you're in favor of this.
I'm actually going to cash
this.
There we go! You have run rules in lower levels, and even in college baseball at some levels, there are run rules, and this is essentially a run rule. So, yeah, I like the idea of saving the bullpen. There's no reason to go out there and continue to waste these arms, continue to risk injury if the game is completely over.
Throw in the towel rule.
It's
mercy rule?
Mercy rule or skunk rule when you're getting skunked.
Well, that's a pickup basketball, skunk rule.
But it's also in Little League or something like that.
They call it a run rule.
Yeah, I guess it's just the run rule.
There is a rule at some level of college baseball where if you're up by 10 or more after the seventh inning, it's a run rule.
It's a run rule. That's got to be based on the conference rules. And if it's a midweek, the managers, the coaches have to agree upon it before the game. But it's a run rule. Yeah. Mercy rule.
College baseball, they don't call the head coach the manager?
They call him the head coach. Yeah, they usually call the – I mean, yes, they call the baseball coach.
Because I know in the majors, it's you have to be very specific. Yeah. Skip or manager.
Throw in the towel rule. Throw in the towel rule. We don't want to see Brandon Belak whenever you're down by 12 runs.
Call it the Brandon Belak rule.
We don't want to see that. I understand not wanting to see the third baseman come in to pitch, but you're taking a major league pitcher and telling him we don't want to see him.
Like Josh Hader. Josh Hader, didn't he pitch early in the season down like 8 runs? Because they were out of pitching.
Was it that much?
Maybe not 8
runs. I don't remember.
I don't think.
But like instead of using Hader for your closer, but let's just say it's 8 runs. Instead of using Hader your closer because the other guys are unavailable, would you rather use your closer down by 8 in the 9th inning? Or would you rather throw in the towel and keep him available for the next day?
Definitely want to keep
you know, you're turning off the channel. Fans are leaving whenever it's 12-1. No one wants to use the pitching. They're trying to shorten games anyways. Throw in the towel.
You know who might be against this, though, is the players union. Because this might eliminate.
Why?
Because it could eliminate the job of the pitchers. Long reliever.
Well, you couldn't eliminate. No. It wouldn't. That wouldn't. Because the long reliever is going to be paid the lowest amount of dollars. And you're not going to eliminate a roster spot. That would be what the union would argue for. The union, you can do this, but you're not eliminating a roster spot and you're not eliminating a pitcher spot. They would have to bargain on that.
If they could guarantee that, then maybe they get on.
They would have to collectively bargain that. You're absolutely right, because that would be a little bit of a wrench into this idea. So that would have to be bargained out. I love this idea. All right, Brian, what do you got?
My cash or trash of this week, Nick Caserio. Just had his worst draft as a general manager of the Houston Texans. And that's not to say that this draft just completed is absolutely a disaster. But when you look at this was his fourth draft. He had a draft in 2021, which wasn't filled with stars, but you got Nico Collins in that draft.
Mills.
So you get Nico Collins in that draft, it's already better than this draft. I don't think anyone drafted here, and look, I'm projecting, I know, they've only been a member of the Houston Texans for like 2 days. But I don't think anyone in this draft class is projected to be as good as Nico Collins. You fast forward a year, that next draft has Derek Stingley in it. You got other contributors like Christian Harris and Jalen Petrie. Damian Pierce had a good year, so I don't think you could put that draft class below this year. And then, of course, last year, I mean, no debate, C.J. Stroud, Tank Dell, no doubt the 2023 draft is better. So I think unless we get a major surprise here, the 2024 draft will be, of these first four drafts by Nick Caserio, his worst draft as Texans general manager.
Now, isn't the caveat that he traded out of the first round as part of the process of getting Stephon Diggs?
No, I'm just looking at who he drafted. I mean, as far as my evaluation, I'm just looking at who he drafted. If you want to factor in, that's fine, but I'm not.
See, and this doesn't include drafts in the future?
No,
of the four drafts.
I don't know what he's going to draft in the future.
Kenyon Green was pretty bad, but you did have Stingley on the other side of that.
I think I would. I'm going to trash this.
Trash.
You got a good player in his first year, but that's it. That's it. All I got was Nico, right? Like Davis Mills was his first ever pick. But I'm going with that draft as his worst. I'm higher on Lasseter than you are. I think that Lasseter is going to be a starting NFL football player for a long time.
Do you think they get? Do you think Lasseter projects is better than Nico?
No,
not necessarily. Not necessarily. No, Nico might be the best player if you're combining those draft classes that year and this year. I think Nico is going to be the best player there. But if we're talking about overall value and overall production, the cumulative of this year's draft class will outweigh just Nico in that draft. Nico's the best player in that pool, though. I'll surrender that. I'll concede that. But I like the tackle. I think he's going to be a good player. I think he's going to be your starting right tackle in 2 years.
Yeah, sure.
I like Bullock. I think Bullock's going to be a starting safety for you. I think they have 3 starters in their first 3 picks. Not all day one. It's going to take a little while. But Nico is better than all of them overall.
I actually think Lasseter could start a corner for this team.
I think he's going to start a nickel corner.
I think he could actually eventually start at the other
corner. I don't disagree with you. Yeah. I don't disagree with you. Like, we're all, not like we, the outliers, I guess, or the outsiders. We're looking at that 40 speed like, oh, he can't make it in the NFL. I disagree with that logic.
I think he can improve. And like you said, look, they're not doing it because of the 40 time. They're doing it because of his field speed and what they've seen on tape and when they wear those technologically advanced sports bras.
Yeah, Kate Stover could be something Wheatstraw says. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I talked to an Ohio State alum that said that he's a freakish athlete.
Really? I don't see that.
That, like, that he just give him a year or two, and they think that, especially from a blocking perspective, but also just athletically, that he is going to surprise people.
See, I don't see the athleticism. I see the toughness, and I think he'll be really solid. But that'll be a fun one to monitor, Brian.
Yeah.
That will be funny.
I would trash it, but I
trash.
Hey, I couldn't remember if you had officially said, but it sounded like from your words you were trashing.
Yeah, I was trash.
Cash or trash after Jose Altuve retires, the Astros enter a total rebuild phase.
Well, it depends on when he retires, because I think he's going to need more than just this contract to get to 300 hits and everything. And then Yordan is still going to be under contract.
Maybe around the same time.
I'm going to trash that. I think with Jim
Crane,
I think that, and the way that they are very savvy and very shrewd about the way they do contracts, I think they might not be World Series contenders, but I think they're going to be a good team.
Do we know that they're as savvy and shrewd anymore, though, with this front office?
The Crane gang
panel?
Is an
I don't think we know
wrinkle.
That.
Hopefully, they bring Jeff Luhnow back before then.
I don't trust this front office to rebuild, especially considering the starting point of where this farm system is right now.
I'm with you. I'm going to trash it, though, because of what Jim Crane said.
Trash.
And Jim Crane said that as long as I'm here, the window is always open.
Which is something that Nick Caserio would never say, because he doesn't know what windows are.
Cash or trash, Abreu is actually closer to 47 years old instead of 37.
Swing-wise or...
Miguel Tejada-wise?
Yeah.
I think he means real life.
Trash it.
Trash.
Legally, I'm going to trash this.
Trash.
Off the record, it might be a different answer. Wheatstraw, cash or trash, Branham sounds like Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights. Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose.
I never watched the show, I couldn't say.
Is that the show or the movie?
Coach Taylor, definitely in the show. I don't think he's
That wasn't
in the
his
movie.
Name in the movie?
It might have been, I don't know.
Same act? The
different actor.
Okay.
In the movie, it was
Billy Bob, right?
Yeah, Billy Bob Thornton. And I don't know the actor's name in, but it's not Billy Bob Thornton.
It was the younger guy in the TV show?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that a little bit.
Although I don't know how young he is. I think he just looks young. Because he used to be on that show where he would read the headlines like before the actual events took place. And then he would go back in time or whatever and like fight what was going to happen. It came on after The Medicine Woman. What was that show called?
Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
It was like Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman. And then the show where he would read the like next day. I'm vaguely remembering this. But he would read the next day's headlines and like actively fight to protect what was going to happen. Like if he would read like the next day's headline, like
I don't have any recollection of that.
10 dead in a car accident or whatever. And he would like go and not let the car accident happen. Yeah, I forget what the show.
Huh.
What's the do you know the actor's name for Coach Taylor on Friday Night Lights?
No, I don't.
Eric Taylor. Eric Taylor's it's Kyle Chandler.
There you go.
Kyle Chandler, IMDb. I bet you it pops up on what he's known for. I bet you it's one of the top ones. He was also in Batman, Kyle Chandler. He was also in Argo. It had to have been one of the first shows he ever did. Let's see. I don't know. We'll find it during the break. Because was it called Homefront? Oh, I don't think it was called Homefront. I'll figure it out during the break. Let all of you know. All right.
A new Will of Bits. Branham searches IMDb.
Yeah, it's not great radio. Let me figure it out later. Figure out exactly what it was later. Early Edition. Why for the win? It was called Early Edition, and I'm pretty sure it was on either right before or right after Dr. Quinn Medicine
Woman. I
don't
remember that show.
Early Edition. That's what it was called. And he would get the Early Edition and then go fight everything that was going to happen. Vaguely remember that. All right, I had a friend try to tell me that Jokic would be better than any center ever in today's NBA. Today's NBA, Jokic would be better than any center that has ever existed. What would be your top 10 center big board for current NBA right now, this moment? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. You found the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, I have a buddy, guy, came to me with this hot take the other day. He feels that Jokic would be better than any center ever in today's NBA. So let's throw that parameter in there. We're talking about today's NBA. We're not talking about...
But it could
about
be any center that's played the game.
Any center ever, okay. You're placing them in 2024. Like, so you're not... You don't have the rules that... You have the current rules. So, right. Like, you can't touch. It's more offensive than it used to be. Where, like, late 80s, early 90s, like, your body... You're throwing dudes down. Right. You got, like, their forearm, like, you know, digging into your back. Bad boy Pistons. All of that. So we're talking about 2024 NBA. He thinks that Jokic would be the greatest center of all time. This is his cash or trash. He would be the greatest center of all time if they're all playing in today's NBA. Do you think that Jokic is better than any center that has ever existed in today's NBA?
I don't. And I think simply it's in part because he doesn't play the kind of defense that some of the guys that we've seen that have the kind of skill set to do the kind of things that's necessary to be a center in today's NBA. Like, and everybody's going to go right away to the no-brainer, which is Dream. Because when you look at Dream, Dream's defense is going to translate no matter what the rules are. Dream's offense is going to translate no matter what the rules are. The only thing that it might be a shortcoming is his three-point game. Because he doesn't shoot. He never shot the threes very frequently. When he did, he wasn't great at it. So you can question the threes. But overall, when you talk about just his athleticism, his passing, his post moves, his ability to score anywhere at any time, it's hard for me to not put Dream at the top of that list.
See, I think that Olajuwon would develop a three-pointer in today's NBA, though.
He had
I think he'd
touch
be even
too.
Better.
He had touch.
Yeah. I think he'd be even better in today's game.
I think I agree. Like, if you go look at his like three-point percentage over the course of his career, very, very little volume, he was like 20%. But if right. He was never asked to do that. Mm-hmm. If you said, hey, Dream, go develop a three-point shot, I think he would easily shoot 35%. Easily 35% from three, especially in today's NBA where you can't touch a dude, you can't breathe on a dude.
He'd get a lot of wide-open looks, yeah.
He would get a lot of wide-open looks. Hakeem Olajuwon would be my top center in today's NBA. If we're using current rules where you can't body guys, you have more space, it's more flow, it's way more valuable to be like the offensive player, but to be athletic, not to be bulky and slow and, you know, slow-footed, I would have Hakeem Olajuwon ahead of Jokic. In fact, I have five guys ahead of Jokic. I will say
same,
this, though.
Same.
I will say this. I do think that Jokic is underrated. Whenever
there's
we look,
no doubt. Because of the way he looks, a lot of it, too.
Probably.
People think he's doughy, so they really refuse.
He is doughy.
Because of that, they refuse to put him at, like, peak excellence of NBA, you know, centers and literally all of the NBA. When you just watch him play, his skill set's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's where I would have Hakeem 1. Jokic does crack my top 6. Jokic is in my top 6. Here's my top 10. If we're talking current, right now, NBA rules, 2024, yep. And we're taking a player pool of everybody that has ever played NBA basketball, Hakeem Olajuwon's my number 1. I'm a homer. Go Cougs. Hakeem Olajuwon at the very top of my list. He's at 1. Number 2, I have Will Chamberlain at number 2. That guy was a freak. That guy could run fast. He could jump high. Incredible score. There's not many people. In fact, I think there's only one other person in the world that can do anything remotely close to what Will Chamberlain can do. So I got Wilt number 2. Number 3 on my list, I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar will be very good in this era. He's number 3 for me. Shaq doesn't really, like, scream 2024, but do you think any centers in the NBA are stopping Shaq? And whenever Shaq was in his prime, we underrate Shaq's athleticism.
Oh, no doubt.
Shaq's athleticism was incredible. So he's number 4 for me. Again, we're getting every player pool, every player that has ever played NBA basketball. Number 5 for me, I'm playing Tim Duncan at center.
Me
I'm
too.
Sorry,
he's
the
on
whole
my list.
The whole power forward center. I don't care. I'm building the roster. Tim Duncan's on my team. He's my center for me, and he's number 5. I have Jokic at number 6. I have Elvin Hayes, go Cougs, at number 7. I have his phone number. He has to make my top 10. I have Moses Malone, 8. I have Bill Russell, who I think is the most overrated player in NBA history. That's sacrilege to a lot of people. I have him number 9, and then I have Karl Malone at number 10. You don't think Karl Malone can play center in today's NBA? You kidding me? 6'8", 270 pounds, that can jump through the roof? Karl Malone can play center in 2024?
Yeah,
Alby Shingun's playing center. Jabari Smith's playing center. You're going to tell me Karl Malone can't play center in this generation?
No,
you kidding me?
I'm saying as far as the exercise go, I thought we were taking actual centers.
No, I'm taking guys that have played in NBA history.
Okay.
I'm making them
right.
My center. You're telling me Karl Malone is not going to punk Jabari Smith?
No,
Karl Malone
right.
would be a
you're
top
right,
three center in the NBA today.
You're right.
Probably top two, actually, behind Jokic. I think I would have him ahead of Embiid. He would play center for me, and he'd play it well. He would play it well. Karl Malone's one of the biggest, best athletes that's ever existed. And I hate saying that because I'm a Rocket fan.
And he's kind of a scumbag, too. But.
Well, so is Wilt. He's number two on my list.
Yeah.
This list is full of scumbags. Well, at least a couple. All right, what is your top 10, Blankers?
Karl Malone, definitely a scumbag.
Dream to me is number one.
All right.
Kareem is number two because Kareem it was a finesse center. He, from the sky hook till he could shoot the three, he was a face-up scorer. So, and his versatility, he could run the floor. So I go Dream, I go Kareem, I go Tim Duncan, then I go Shaq as well because the fact is you can't stop him
no
matter what. So you can't foul him.
And he's a better athlete than he gets credit for.
Right. He got thicker later in his career. But his heydays, when you go back and look at the Orlando series and even against Yao, that dude was just a physical force, but also he brought the ball up. He ran the break sometimes.
He would dominate. No one could stop him. No one could stop him. He might struggle a little bit defensively, but offensively, he would be unstoppable.
So then I go from there to Moses.
You're sleeping on Wilt.
I got Moses, then Wilt. Because I think from the combo platter of just the pure strength that was underrated to Moses about the fact that, and he was he didn't miss games. He played both ends. He had everything that you needed from him, and defensively, he was really, really good. He cleaned the glass on both sides. I think that Wilt, because the fact that the reason why I have Wilt lower is because there really wasn't any centers that could contest him. And in today's NBA, I think there would be a lot of centers that could contest what Wilt brought to the table, unlike what he brought.
But he would also have the benefit of modern technology, modern training, all that sort of stuff. So I think
I didn't see Wilt shoot face up jumpers. I didn't see Wilt do a whole lot, but dunk.
You had Shaq up there, though.
Right, but I'm saying, but Shaq was physically strong, but also athletic and filled out. And Shaq had post moves. Wilt didn't have to have a whole lot of post moves. He had turnarounds. Yeah, when he played Russell, he did. But so I had Moses, then Wilt, then Jokic, then Russell, and then Walton.
Okay. Walton's interesting. Somebody texted Walton. Because you're talking about today's era, too. You're talking about today.
It was perfect for his game.
Injuries crushed him. But...
Yeah, but good shooter. Good passer,
yeah.
Very gifted skill-wise. I think Walton should be on that list just from what he had when he was in his prime.
Walton was very close to making my top 10, too, but I went with the hulking Karl Malone ahead of him. What do you got here, Brian? What's your top 10?
We're slightly different, but obviously a lot of the names are pretty similar in pretty similar spots. Actually, I know this is sacrilege, go Cougs, but I actually have Kareem number one. Like, for everything that we could put on Akeem as far as athlete, run the floor, Kareem was just the same. I think people will sometimes remember him at the end of the Lakers' run as being kind of slow, but that wasn't who Kareem was throughout his career, and he could get his shot off on anybody. I mean, even in an era where he was actually going against other elite bigs, he could get off his shot on anybody. And today's NBA has gotten that much smaller. Hakeem is number two for all the reasons you guys have talked about. I have Wilt and Shaq as very similar in back-to-back three and four. I think, you know, given the shrinking size of the NBA center, their power, even though they didn't have necessarily great post moves or any sort of face-up jumper, I think their size and power would still dominate the average NBA center just on physicality and size alone. Five, I've got Tim Duncan. I mean, it wasn't that long ago he was in the NBA. I think some of the things we see in today's NBA still apply to when Tim Duncan
underrated played. Athlete, too, I think.
Yeah, definitely underrated athlete. And he could get us a shot off on anybody, too. Had the face-up game. Number six, as I mentioned, Jeremy, I had same as you. I had Jokic at six. I think that's kind of where I slot him in. Rest of my top 10, I have Moses Malone at seven. One name that you guys, neither one of you mentioned, David Robinson. Great
text
athlete.
Line saying David Robinson.
Great athlete. I think he's a poster boy for someone who would fit better in today's age than he did in his own age.
David Robinson's a poster boy for Hakeem Olajuwon.
Well, I have Robinson 8 and Hakeem 2. There's a difference there. So I am saying, yes, Hakeem, much greater sign than David Robinson. But David Robinson was an elite athlete, MVP, obviously won a couple titles with the help of Tim Duncan. David Robinson, number eight. And then my last two, Bill Walton. I agreed with Joel there. I put him in my at number nine. He was a great athlete before the injuries. MVP, won a title in Portland. And he was another guy that could run up and down the court before he got hurt. Even adjusted his game with the Celtics after the injury. And number 10, I felt kind of forced to put Bill Russell in. I don't know if I believe it. I might find a spot for someone else in there, but Bill Russell, I mean, he did win 11 titles. I'll go ahead and put him
in
there.
You had Will, but not Russ. But you were apprehensive about Russ?
Sorry, say that again?
You were apprehensive about Russell, but you had Wilt on your list.
Yeah.
I mean, Wilt's numbers are way better.
Wilt was a much better scorer and a much better rebounder.
But in today's NBA, Russell was a way better shooter.
Yeah, he's just never his scoring totals were just never that high.
He averaged like in the teens. Yeah, Wilt averaged like 80 a game.
Played on the ultimate team.
Sure. But was he as good as Wilt? I don't think he's even close to as good as Wilt. 713-780-ESPN. Where did you have Jokic, Blankers?
Seven.
So we had him 6, 6, and 7.
6, 6, 7.
All right, who did we miss on the list that should be in the top 10? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Also, is there a disgruntled star that's out there? The answer is yes, but should the Rockets be interested in this disgruntled star? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. If he's disgruntled with his employer, he better hope he has HR&P. HR&P's Cougar, owned by my colleague, Go Cougs. He used to protect a Heisman Trophy winner. Now he wants to protect your business. Business owners, let HR&P help you. They're going to make your business better. Whether it's HR compliance, whether it's benefits administration, payroll, onboarding, HR&P can help in any or all of these areas. There's no boxes with HR&P. It doesn't matter how small or how big, HR&P completely customizes a plan for what you and your business needs. If you have a problem, you have an issue, you want to take a little bit off your plate, HR&P will find a way to help so that you can spend time, you know, back in your business, growing your business. They also do it in a way that's unique. Technology meets service. They have the best tech. You'll love that, but you'll also love their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You'll never talk to a stranger. You'll be talking to someone who knows you and they know your business needs. Give them a call, 281-880-6525. Let HR&P customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or check them out at hrp.net. That's hrp.net.
ESPN 97.5.